Good morning. Good morning. The meeting of House Fisheries Committee will come to order at 10:05 a.m. in room 120. Today is Tuesday, February 10th, 2015. Members present are Representative Heron, Representative Foster, Representative Christ Tompkins, and Representative Ortiz, and myself, Chair Stutes. Let the record reflect we have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you for coming. And today we're going to have a presentation put on by Mike Cern from ASME, Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. Thank you for coming, Mike. And please state your name for the record.
Morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Michael Cern. I'm the executive director of the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, and I want to thank you for the opportunity this morning to share with you a little bit about what ASME does for the state of Alaska and for the seafood industry in Alaska. Provided in your materials is our annual report to the governor. It looks like this. It contains a lot of the information I'll be sharing with you today. Also in that package is a one-page summary of the governor's budget request for ASME this year, as well as a one-page summary of the economic impact of the seafood industry in Alaska. So ASME is a public-private partnership of the state of Alaska and the seafood industry. I report to a seven-member board of directors that's appointed by the governor, and we have 20 full-time staff based both in Alaska and Seattle. We also have four ex officio members, one from the governor's office, one from the Department of Commerce, one from the Senate, and one from the House, which is vacant at the moment, yet to be named by the speaker, formerly held by Representative Osterman from Kodiak. We are the official seafood marketing arm of the state of Alaska, and our primary mission is to increase the value of Alaska seafood both in the U.S. and internationally. This is a summary of of the governor's budget request. ASME gets funding from a number of different sources. Our primary source of funding is from the fishing industry itself via a voluntary industry tax of 0.5% on the ex-vessel value of fish. The ex-vessel value of fish is the price paid to fishermen by the processors. So the processors pay an ASME tax to the Department of Revenue, which is in turn transferred to ASME. Our second source of funds is through a federal grant that typically averages around $4.5 million. And then finally, we get state funding in the form of a general fund match for that federal grant, which requires a match, as well as $1.8 million in unrestricted general funds. So before we move on, I want to call your attention to that last line where it says voluntary tax and carry forward. ASME is a unique industry in the state in that we are a cash-based agency. We have to have money in the bank before we obligate funds, and this was a change that took place in 2010. So the board of directors had us maintain a kind of a reserve carry forward balance in our budget, and that carry forward balance serves a number of purposes. Primarily, it's to offset the rise and fall of revenue that we get from the fishing industry due to changes in fish prices. It's a very dynamic industry, the seafood industry, so international currency rates, geopolitical situations, the natural cycles of wild capture fisheries, quotas constantly change the amount of fish that's caught, the prices of fish, so the revenue we get from industry goes up and down. So we averaged it out at $2 billion, which equates to about $10 million to ASME. And so when we, in good years, when we collect more than $10 million from the fishing industry, we put money into this carry forward fund, and on years where we collect less than $10 million from the industry, we, you know, withdraw from that carry forward fund. Not unlike, you know, what the state does with the oil reserves.
Madam Chair.
So the second reason for this carry.
Yes, Representative Foster. I'm sorry.
Sorry. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just thought you were going to move away from the slide next, and I just wanted to ask how your FY16 budget compares to the previous year's budget.
It's a 14% reduction in general funds, about $1 million. Less, yes.
Thank you.
Then a $1.5 million reduction in the voluntary industry tax carry forward line, which is more or less a reduction in our authorization. So one's real dollars, one's a reduction in authorization.
I get the feeling you probably mentioned that, but I just I missed it, so I wanted to ask. Thank you.
I did not mention it, but thank you for asking.
Okay.
So the second reason for that carry forward fund is that federal grant is a very tenuous grant. It's from a $200 million pot of money that's overseen by the USDA, and it's attached to the Farm Bill. And every year in Congress, both on the House and Senate, there's some form of legislation that's introduced that either eliminates or significantly reduces that $200 million pot of money. So it's called the Market Access Program. We also compete for that grant every year with 120 other commodity groups. So the orange people and the raisin people and the grapes and the cherries, who are all competing for that money to market their products overseas, compete for that grant every year. So in the event that that grant is either substantially reduced or eliminated, that carry forward balance would allow us to maintain our international program, which is by far our largest program, for 1 year, which will allow us to A, either adjust our spend plan for the following year, or B, search out alternate forms of funding or a combination of the both. The third reason for that carry forward balance is to respond to, you know, dynamic market conditions that were unforeseen when we do our 1 year strategic marketing plan. And there's a couple examples of that that I'll point out in the presentation. So just to put that number into context, that $24 million budget, our largest competitor is Norwegian Seafood, and the Norwegian Seafood marketing budget is $75 million. So, you know, we're operating on about a third of what they do. So this is a list of our programs, three marketing programs: food service, retail, and international. We also have a small communications program, a seafood technical program, and a food aid program. And then, of course, we have a fiscal and administrative staff to support. And I'll talk about each one of these briefly. I have one or two, three slides on each one. But I also wanted to share with you that we have a very robust committee process, and personally, I think it's ASME's greatest strength. We have four committees that focus on species-specific marketing issues. They feed information to our three marketing committees, one for food service, retail, and international. We have a technical committee of scientists that focus on food safety and quality. And then we have a customer panel that represents some of Alaska Seafood's largest customers worldwide, who the board meets with once a year. They give us feedback on our performance, and as well as looking at challenges and opportunities in the coming year. These committee members are very seasoned veterans in the industry. A lot of them are industry leaders. We have presidents and executive directors of trade organizations, and we're very much an industry-driven organization. They kind of lay out our marketing plan for us to execute on a year-to-year basis. They approve our budget for forwarding to the board. So, again, a lot of very high-level industry involvement in what we do. Moving on to the programs.
Yes, Representative Price Tompkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Stern, in which markets primarily do Alaska Seafood, Norwegian Seafood most head-to-head compete in?
Through the chair.
If there's an answer to that question.
Most of them. We operate 21 countries. They operate 25, and the majority of them overlap, including the United States. They spend probably as much or more in the United States than we do. So.
Thank you.
Food service program works with restaurants, major food service distributors like Sysco and Food Services of America. They work with major universities, chefs, culinary institutions, all to spread the word and promote Alaska Seafood. Last year, they did promotions with 28 national or regional restaurant chains, which resulted in Alaska Seafood promotions in over 11,000 restaurants. with 14 food service distributors, and they are starting to work more on trying to get Alaska Seafood International and Metropolitan K through 12 programs through these food service distributors. Events at 6 universities and several, you know, high-level national conferences and events to promote seafood. They also, you know, we periodically do research on behalf of the fishing industry. Last year, we conducted some research, and this is a summary of it, on fish sandwiches, which, believe it or not, buys a tremendous amount of Alaska whitefish in the United States. So the research, you know, shows that there's higher profit margins for fish sandwiches than burgers or chicken, and it profiles the typical fish sandwich customer, so these restaurants can target those customers. It kind of shows that they'll make money by menuing fish sandwiches year-round instead of just during Lent, and it helps get our guys foot in the door with these major restaurant chains. So right now, ASME's got promotions going with 15 of the top 100 restaurant chains in the United States, including McDonald's, Burger King, Sonic's, Long John Silver's, and so on. So our investment, our food service dollars are well spent. On average, a restaurant will invest $10 for every $1 we allocate to a promotion of theirs. We maintain a number two ranking on seafood menus in the U.S. Every other year, there's a company that surveys over 400,000 menus, and we've maintained a rank of number two as a brand that's called out behind Angus Beef.
Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry. Representative Price Tompkins, please.
What's number one?
Angus Beef.
Angus Beef. Sorry, I just missed that.
And so, you know, our budget's like a rounding error in the beef promotion budget, so I'm not sure that we could attain number one. Okay, moving on to the retail program. Retail program works with grocery store chains throughout the country, not only to do Alaska seafood promotions, but one of their big responsibilities is to educate the people working in the seafood department and the person behind the seafood counter to answer consumer questions. They create and distribute point-of-sale material. It's the things in the store like the signage and the tents and the recipes and the posters and the dividers. And last year we distributed over 1.5 million pieces of point-of-sale material to stores throughout the country. So we did promotions with 80 chains, over 25,000 stores. And one of the biggest efforts of last year was a pink salmon campaign. If you remember in 2013, there was a wide margin record of pink salmon that returned. That resulted in about a three-year supply, major surplus of pink salmon, which had the potential to negatively impact prices, you know, this past year. So the board of directors asked us to put together a $1.5 million aggressive marketing campaign for pink salmon. And that's, you know, going back to my budget slide, that $1.5 million came from that carry forward fund that the board has the ability to use in situations like this to kind of protect prices and for the fishermen and the processors in situations that just can't be anticipated like this. So we were very successful. We cleared the inventory. We helped short up prices, and and it was a kind of an unqualified success. Retail program also did some research. They hired a company to scan 2 years worth of UPC data for seafood. That's the little barcode on products in the grocery store. And then they analyzed all that data, and they came up with some tactics, like when to promote, what price to promote, what to carry for a variety of Alaska seafood products. And they came up with some lessons learned. These stores were, you know, gained more profit from selling seafood because these are the tactics that they employed. So we shared those lessons learned with other grocery store chains. And in one case, there was a national grocery store chain that actually doubled its sales of Coho's and tripled its sales of Chum's due to the research that we conducted that we shared with their sales force. We also revamped our consumer-facing website, wildalaskaseafood.com. I encourage you to go take a look. It's very kind of food-forward, something that that the consumer would look for when they're thinking about Alaska seafood. Again, results show that there's a 2-to-1 preference for wild Alaska seafood, and that more consumers are likely to recommend Alaska seafood than any other protein. Before I move on to our international program, I wanted to share with you where Alaska seafood goes. So while the U.S. is our largest single country customer, 2/3 of Alaska seafood is exported, and therefore, consequently, the international program is by far our largest program. And we allocate, you know, $8 to $9 million a year, which is the federal grant plus the state GF match, to fund this program. So we operate in 21 countries in 8 regional programs, as depicted on the slide, Japan, China, and Asia, several European countries, and Brazil.
Excuse me, Representative Craig Thompson.
On the previous slide, you had the breakdown on where Alaska seafood goes by value. If you were to compare that chart, that pie chart, with a pie chart from 10 years ago, where's the most change? For instance, is the Chinese market growing? Which markets are shrinking?
Through the chair. That's something I would like to get back to you on, but the domestic market in China is growing. That China 3% is an estimate. A lot of our fish goes to China and gets reprocessed and then sent back to Canada, the U.S., and Europe. So that pie chart is not representative of the total amount of fish that's sent to China. It's an estimate of where that fish goes once it's reprocessed and left China to its final consumer destination. But the domestic market in China is growing, and we expect it to grow more. It's something that we're focusing some marketing effort on. But I would say, to a large degree, it's probably not a lot different than it was 10 years ago. So, but I will, you know, look into that further and get back to you.
Thank you. Along those lines, I have a question, please. So do you have any idea what percentage of the fish that goes over there is reprocessed and sent back?
What percentage?
Mm-hmm. How much fish are they reprocessing for us, and or reprocessing and sending back? Any idea?
Total volume? No. That's something I'll have to get back on as well.
Might be interesting.
You know?
Thank you.
Volume-wise, I don't know. Percentage-wise, it's the vast majority of it, 90%. So the international program conducts a variety of public relations, retail, and food service promotions and consumer events globally. We participate in about 25 trade shows a year. Trade shows are a great way to reach customers and to get exposure and attention. The largest seafood trade show in the world is held in Brussels every spring, called the Global Seafood Expo. Last year's show resulted in projected sales of $544 million. So ASME does all the legwork and the logistics for that show for Alaska seafood companies. There was 22 companies that sell Alaska seafood that participated in the show last year. 11 of them are, you know, fairly large companies. They had their own booth, so ASME helped subsidize the booth. We helped arrange the booths and do all the setup and, like I said, the logistics and the legwork getting ready for the show. But ASME also has a huge footprint at the show, and that provides an opportunity for 11 last year, 11 of our smaller seafood companies to, you know, participate in a show of this magnitude where they might not otherwise have the opportunity to do so. This show draws over 30,000 attendees with representatives from over 140 countries. So something that we're doing in Asia is shifting some marketing effort towards online promotions. Online sale, online and the internet purchasing in Asia is growing fast, and they're selling food and seafood online. And we did a one-week promotion in their equivalent to what we call Black Friday, and that one-day promotion resulted in about $1 million in sales. So I don't know if you probably have heard in the news about the company Alibaba, which is their Amazon in Asia, and it just went public not too long ago, one of the largest IPOs ever. So when the CEO was on Bloomberg News promoting his website and the IPO and such, he called out Alaska Seafood as one of the success stories and one of the products that he's selling on his website. Finally, we do a lot of press and trade trips to Alaska. We host folks that are involved in the seafood industry to Alaska to show them around. This has been very successful at getting people excited about our fish. Last year, we hosted delegations from Brazil, Germany, Europe, and Japan. There's a picture of an in-store promotion in Brazil, a picture of a ASME booth at a trade show in China. And moving on to some results, which survey shows that 91% of Chinese consumers say that Alaska seafood is of the best quality. Three quarters have purchased Alaska seafood in the past year, and 70% look for Alaska origin when making seafood purchases. The international program is always looking for new opportunities and new markets. We've recently tested markets in Dubai, Mexico, and Brazil. Brazil proved to be a success story. We opened up an office there two or three years ago and have increased direct trade with Brazil by orders of magnitude. Right now we're looking at Southeast Asia and have participated in shows in both Manila and Singapore recently. Shown in the slide is our International Marketing Program Director, Alexa Tonkovich, which I am proud to report last week was selected as one of Alaska Business Journal's top 40 under 40 professionals in the state. Our communications program serves a lot of functions. They oversee our public relations contract. They do in-state industry outreach, government affairs. He's the point person for the legislature. Oversees social media, press tours, press events, media requests, media outreach. Maintains a huge image library for use by our industry and our customers, and provides informational services. So the results of all that, about $1.5 million investment is about $59 million in earned media. Earned media is what we would have had to pay for the stories that are generated from this effort, had we just paid for the story or paid for the advertisement. So $1.5 million, resulted in $59 million worth of media. So we, just to name a very, very few, we had Alaska Seafood stories online on foodnetwork.com, Cooking Light magazine, prominent newspapers like the Wall Street Journal and New York Times, TV shows like the Today Show, and we also work very closely with several of the, food-centric food shows on TV, which I have an example of right here. This is Master Chef.
Your unlucky number.
It's time for another Mystery Box Challenge.
On the count of three, very carefully, lift your boxes. One, two, three, lift.
Alive, huh?
We're all going to be hacking at the same giant dead creature under the giant box.
That's right. One single knife.
Things are about to get a little cutthroat in here.
You'll be using your knife to fill it what's under this huge mystery box. Ready to find out what it is?
Yes, sir.
Wow. freshest, most incredible salmon that money can buy. Wild king salmon, line caught from the pristine waters of Alaska.
We want all of you to make us one composed, MasterChef-worthy salmon dish using one of these salmon.
Oh, hell yeah. It's time to show these clowns what I really, really got.
Now, it's time for everyone to come up here and get your salmon.
This fish is not something that you can buy at your grocery store.
It's like the most amazing salmon I've ever seen.
Oh my God, it's totally almost as big as me.
It's a real privilege to be able to have an ingredient like this to work with today.
As you can see, there is one fish left and it's not going to waste. It's for us. I'm going to fillet it, Graham's going to cook it, and Joe,
I'm going to eat it.
Is everyone ready?
Yes, yes, sir.
Just remember, each fish is worth about $450. No pressure. Your 60 minutes starts now.
Okay, so that's one of 100 examples I could show you of press that we've gotten on Alaska seafood and these kind of things. They don't happen by accident. It's a tremendous effort by Tyson, our communications director, is here with me, as well as our PR firm. This particular show is a result of a long-standing professional relationship that Tyson has with some of the producers of the show. So when this show was aired, it was the number one watched show on during prime time on Friday on Fox Network when it was aired. So this is something, finally, to wrap up the communications, this is something we're excited about. It's brand new for 2015, and we're partnering with Princess Cruise Lines. And it's just in Alaska. It has most of the cruise lines are owned by the same parent company, and right now it's just in Alaska. This is an effort that has a tremendous potential for growth, but we're really excited that this is something that's been years in the making. And this summer they're going to be featuring Alaska seafood and chefs and demonstrations and promotional materials on their cruises this summer up in Alaska. It's a really good example of how, you know, the promotional efforts and the marketing efforts that we do kind of translates to other industries in Alaska. We also have two other programs, the technical program and food aid. Our food aid program works with government and non-governmental organizations to provide Alaska products for food banks and disaster relief programs. They also, to a lesser degree, work on developing products and markets for underutilized species and byproducts. So this program was instrumental in securing $42 million worth of government buys for canned pink salmon last year. That did quite a bit to, again, reduce that excess inventory from the 2013 run. The technical program is actually spelled out in statute that to focus on seafood safety and quality and labeling and certification issues and value-added products. They assist industry with compliance with federal and state laws along these lines, and they have been extremely busy of late working on seafood certification issues, which I'll talk about in a little bit more in depth later in the presentation. So that completes a summary of our programs. I'd like to spend one slide talking about some challenges and opportunities we see in the next year or two. You know, we're kind of over the hump on pink salmon, but, you know, 2014 presented us with another challenge with regard to sockeye salmon. It's a good challenge. The Bristol Bay run came in 40% higher than predicted. They're forecasting another record run next year. On top of that, the Fraser River down in Canada had about a $10 million fish run. So there is an excess supply of sockeyes right now. So the board's asked us again to tap into that carry forward fund and come up with a aggressive campaign to market sockeyes. We've already begun in Northern Europe, and later on this month I'll be presenting a $1 million promotional plan specifically targeting sockeyes for this year to try and, you know, get the inventory of sockeyes down to short prices for sockeyes this coming year. The Russian trade embargo has also had an impact on us. We have typically only exported about $130 million of $3.2 billion worth of exports to Russia. But yet, the situation in Ukraine has resulted in Russia embargoing fish and fish products from the U.S. from being imported into Russia. So we're looking at alternative markets for that. That's not something that we've this is an effort we're doing within our existing budget structure. However, you know, I read an article not too long ago in the trade press that says that the Norwegian marketing group has allocated $10 million of their budget to redirect the farm salmon that used to go to Russia to other markets. So they're allocating $10 million, you know, basically half of my annual budget, to just to redirect the farm salmon that used to go to Russia. So they're ramping up their efforts, their mark salmon marketing efforts in the U.S. and in all the countries that we compete with for our wild stocks. We continue to educate the congressional delegation and the press and our customers about the impacts of illegal Russian crab. You know, in years not too long ago, there was more illegal Russian crab on the market than there was legal Alaska crab on the market. And our economic analysis tells us that that could have a that's definitely having a negative impact on the crab prices, but the estimate is to the tune of 25%. So our competition also provides sometimes opportunities, but more often challenges for us. You know, a couple years ago, Chile had a disastrous disease problem with their farm salmon, and that provided an opportunity for us. Right now, tilapia prices are very high, or getting to the point where our whitefish can compete head-to-head. So we're looking at potentially getting some of our pollock fillets into the fresh case in U.S. markets. Walmart, you may have seen last week before, just came out with a whole new line of Alaska fish products that they're promoting, and that includes rockfish cod and sole, which competes head-to-head with tilapia, so we're trying to take advantage of that opportunity. But seafood isn't our only competition. We also compete for the center of the plate protein with beef, chicken, and pork. So, you know, there has been a drought, you know, at the beginning of the decade, a 2-3 year drought, which drove feed prices through the roof, which caused beef prices to skyrocket, pork prices to skyrocket, the supply to go down. That provided seafood an opportunity to fill that niche. For the first time in several years, seafood consumption in the United States ticked up. You know, could be contributed to this, you know, change in supply and demand of the different proteins, but the drought's over, and I, you know, came from a global marketing conference last week that said that to expect a lot more and a lot cheaper beef and pork to be coming on the market in the foreseeable future. So right now the beef herd is at a 60-year low, so they're going to be adding cattle to the inventory, you know, to the tunes of six and seven figures a year if the drought doesn't come back. Our competition also spends a lot of money on marketing. I shared two examples of where we had to react to market conditions for pinks and sockeyes. I'll give you a couple other examples with some other proteins. And last summer, there was an excess supply of lobster, and the state of Maine allocated $2 million to market lobsters to try and reduce their oversupply. High pork prices had sales way down, so the pork board, who has a $70 million budget, I think, allocated $3 million last summer to promote pork just for one summer promotion. 2 years ago, there was an excess supply of Atlantic cod in the Barents Sea. The quota went way up, and so the Norwegians allocated $3 million just for two countries. It was the UK and the US. They spent $3 million between those two countries in promoting Atlantic cod, which obviously competes head-to-head with our Pacific cod. So competition, sometimes opportunities, more often challenges. Next, like the rest of the state, we're facing fiscal challenges. We had a small budget reduction last year, $388,000, like Representative Foster identified earlier. It's $1 million reduction this year. But that's compounded by a couple of things. First is our economist, our contract economist, predicts that we're going to expect $300,000 to $800,000 less in industry revenue this coming year, for a variety of reasons. But we've also been asked to take on a pretty new and major responsibility with regard to seafood certification, which I'll talk a little bit more about in the next slide. But this new program that the board's asked us to take on board, I estimate, is going to cost, have an annual fiscal note, so to speak, of north of $600,000 to comply with that. We're going to have to find within our budget to absorb. So, decreasing revenue from the state, decreasing revenue from the industry, at the same time we're increasing our scope of responsibility, is going to make it a challenging next couple of years for us. So, seafood certification. This is a very significant issue for the state, for the industry, for ASME. And I could spend an entire session talking about this topic, but I'm going to try and wrap it up in like 3 minutes in one slide here. So, not all the fisheries in the world are managed as well as Alaska's fisheries are managed. And so, about 15 years ago, the environmental community started this movement that promoted third-party certifications of sustainability of fisheries around the world. And it's gotten to the point now where there are several markets that Alaska sells to that are requiring this third-party evaluation of how Fish and Game and how National Marine Fisheries is managing the fisheries in Alaska. Outsiders coming in, evaluating what they're doing, and saying, yes, Alaska is managed sustainably. So because this has become a market requirement, the Fish and Game State of Alaska partnered with a group called the Marine Stewardship Council back around 2000. That's back when the MSC was brand new, just getting started. Alaska salmon was the very first major fishery that they certified. And the thought was back then, and the pitch was, that you will get rewarded in the marketplace by way of a higher price if you have this label, this eco label, that shows that you are harvesting sustainably, that the consumer will pay more for fisheries that are harvested sustainably. So since we partnered with them in 2000, we've learned some hard lessons. First of all, it's a private organization. It was founded by the World Wildlife Foundation, and as a private organization, they have the ability, and they have changed their fee structure on what they charge. The industry has to pay for every product that has their label on it, and they've changed their standard. And they self-admittedly say one of our goals is to seek constant improvement. So they're constantly changing and upgrading the standard, and what was good enough for our salmon fisheries in 2005 is no longer good enough in 2010, and the bar keeps raising, the goalpost keeps moving, and we notice that our Alaska brand, that ASME for over 30 years has worked so hard to reach kind of an iconic status, is being eroded. I've seen this firsthand in several stores in several countries in Europe where seafood products are labeled as MSC salmon or MSC cod and not Icelandic cod or Norwegian cod or Alaska salmon. It's just plain old MSC, fill in the blank on the species. And it kind of reduces our products to a commodity status, on a kind of an equal plane with other fisheries and other fish species. And I think a good example of that is when the MSC certified Russian pollock under some very divisive, questionable circumstances. They certified a Russian pollock fishery, which is just about equal in volume to the Alaska pollock fishery. And where we used to get a $200 or $300 a ton premium for Alaska pollock, once the Russian pollock fishery got certified, instead of the market paying more for the Russian pollock because they became MSC certified, we were getting less for our pollock because there was so much more MSC certified pollock on the market. And so, you know, I've heard estimates from the industry that that cost last year, that cost the industry about $50 million. Another lesson that we learned is that you know, we've experienced, you know, interference with the governance of Alaska resources. You know, it's not unlike the state's concern about the federal government, you know, interfering in the oversight of our resources. We're having the same sort of pressure from the non-governmental organizations on influencing how we manage our fisheries resources. Their strategy, and it's a publicized strategy. It's not a secret. Is that they try and force governmental change through restricted market access. So what started out back in 2000 when we first joined this program as a reward for well-managed fisheries has become the cost to have access to the market, more or less. So in 2010, you know, the industry, based on all this, said, ASME, come up with an alternative to this MSC certification program. You know, United Nations, you know, has standards and protocols to establish an eco-labeling program. There's an international standards organization which addresses these sorts of issues, and so we sought out in 2010 to come up with an alternative, and we did. It's called the Responsible Fisheries Management Program. All Alaska fisheries are currently, all major Alaska, main major Alaska fisheries are RFM certified. And in 2012, most of the salmon producers withdrew from the MSC program. That caused a huge backlash with the NGO community. We lost a lot of customers. We continue to lose customers. We've had a tremendous amount of success. I don't want to be all gloom and doom, but you know, the majority of our customers have accepted and continue to purchase Alaska seafood. Walmart's the best example. I'm sure you've all heard of that last year with our work with Walmart and them coming to the state. But there are several others that support us, and several other, you know, responsible fishing nations that support our efforts. But there are still large components of the market, primarily in Europe, that still do not recognize the RFM program. So in 2014, in response to all this, the board kind of directed us to take ownership, make governance improvements, come into conformance with international standards, become accredited, ISO accredited with the U.S. Accreditation body, the American National Standards Institute. This is just a tremendous amount of work, so much so that I requested and had OMB approve a new PCN to oversee this program. The PCN was approved. Obviously, no funding came along with it, but we're absorbing it within our own budget. I think we're starting to move the needle. Retailers are starting to realize that choice is important, and having more than one certification option is important, gives them flexibility, and we're starting to garner a lot more support for the program. But we have ways to go. It's a critically important. Yes?
I do have a question. Have you noticed if any European fish suppliers have switched over to the RFM, or are they all still on the MSC program? Majority.
Well, Madam Chair, I don't know whether it's a matter of one or the other. It's what we're hoping to achieve is that customer buyers, whether it be in Europe or Asia or the United States, recognize the RFM program as a viable source of sustainable seafood.
As well as
MSC and any other eco label that they like to recognize. So there's an international effort afoot right now that's supposed to begin this year, where major retailers from around the world and NGOs have all gotten together. They've been working on this for 2 years, and they're coming up with a benchmark standard for seafood eco-labels, not just for wild capture, but for aquaculture. And so we have submitted the RFM program to be pilot tested against this new standard, and that's going to take place sometime between April and June. And if we anticipate successfully, you know, benchmarking against this standard, and then if that's the case, then all the retailers who are participating in this effort, who make a lot of them currently have MSC-only sourcing policies, have pledged to recognize the results of this, it's called GSSI, Global Seafood Sustainability Initiative. So it's the culmination of a three-year effort that hopefully comes to pass this year.
Thank you.
So, critically important issue to the state and the seafood industry, and I can only, you know, emphasize this point by sharing with you that the previous administration, you know, the governor has given a keynote address on this specific topic to hundreds of attendees at a major international seafood show. He's met at our request with a number of CEOs of companies that buy tens of millions of dollars of Alaska seafood. I've traveled with key commissioners to meet with industry representatives on this issue. A couple of commissioners traveled to Walmart with me to meet with Walmart on this issue. Senator Begich held Senate hearings on this topic, and Senator Murkowski passed legislation that prohibits the U.S. government purchasing arm from using private standards like this in government purchases of seafood. So it's gotten attention at the highest level, you know, state and federal government within Alaska. So these are some examples of you know, quotations and packaging that kind of highlights what I've been talking about in the last slide. You know, the top packaging is from a U.S. supermarket that, you know, just promotes MSC salmon and not Alaska salmon. And the bottom one is a European example of packaging that I took when I was visiting a store in France, I think it was. That shows, you know, on the back, maybe somewhere in the small print, it might say product of the USA or product of Alaska, but that's the front of the package, you know, MSC salmon, not Alaska salmon. So some dated but representative quotes from the NGO community about Alaskans are going to regret the path they're trying to go down with that's as a result of us withdrawing from the MSC program and salmon. The next three quotes show, you know, kind of are illustrative of how they try and influence governments and the management of resources. You know, they're very vocal about their opposition to hatcheries. They actually convinced the California state government to kind of cede their definition of sustainability and said it's California law that if you want the California label, you have to get MSC certified first. And that last one, it's blown up and it's a little blurry, but I find this one particularly offensive. And this was a picture taken on a seafood product in Europe where it says these fish stocks are managed in coordination with the state of Alaska, right? So it's MSC is claiming that we're co-managing the fisheries with them is the implication here. So before we wrap, you know, I just want to highlight some of the takeaways in that one-page handout I gave you on the economic impact of the seafood industry. Seafood industry creates 60,000 jobs in Alaska, which is one in eight workers, contributes over $100 million in local and state tax revenue, and is the largest private sector employer in the state. And circling back to my first slide about our mission is to increase the value of Alaska seafood, this is a time series of the value of Alaska seafood over the past 10 years, which shows the success of our efforts in partnership with the seafood industry. You know, this basically increased from 1.3 billion to over 2 billion with essentially the same amount of volume of resource over this period. You know, that results in more tax revenue, more jobs, and more investment in the state. So with that, I'd like to close and be happy to answer any additional questions.
Do we have any questions from this committee? Well, I certainly do want to thank you for coming and giving us your presentation. And before I go too much further, I also want to apologize for being a little remiss in introducing our staff here. We have we have Kelly Burnett on records, and we have from the LIO Jessica Honlin, and then of course my staff member Reed Harris, who is he keeps me on the straight and narrow with my fisheries committee, and I certainly do appreciate it. And if we have no questions, then let me just mention that on Thursday we'll be addressing House Bill 41, which is an act relating to sport fishing services, sport fishing operators, and sport fishing guides. And I want to say thank you to my committee members. And I will, if there's no further business to come before this committee, we will adjourn at 10:55.